All right, welcome back, everybody. So here we are today with part two of our interview with Ian Terry. If you missed part one, would probably recommend listening to that before you dive in here today. I guess it's not mandatory, but some things along the way may make some more sense if you've heard the first part. So I'm guessing you can find that pretty easily in the same location that you are hearing me right now. So let's just dive in. I don't need to waste any more of your time today. Here is part two. Enjoy.
Longer than the braid end of the season that Ian won. Like, I don't know how it's going to stack up.
You know, I do think it's interesting because I felt, as bizarre as it seems, I felt like, and much to, popular opinion that I see out there on Twitter, just because I don't vocalize thought or act on thought doesn't mean that I'm not thinking about things in a tactical way. My understanding is that I was not heavily featured in the episodes because I am in fact trying to lie low. Therefore, I'm not getting diary room sessions. And if your strategy is to act like a dumbass, and I quote in my intro package, act like a dumbass, and you're not getting the DR sessions that are backing up this idea, how that will look to someone who is watching the feeds is going to be, this person is just a dumbass. Well, no, I'm very actively cognizant, and I'm trying to put that out there.
I feel like they did go out of their way even to show you in the episodes from time to time, saying, I understand how this looks, and I'm doing it on purpose.
Right. And I'm glad they put that in there.
Yeah, no, I think people being critical of you for that are truly just disregarding everything that has been put in front of their eyes and just believing whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was very clear. I did say to a few people that, and it really kind of goes back to Koss, friend of the show, and I at a bar after a Houston Astros game, and I want to say 2017, early 2017. Perhaps 2016, somewhere in there, where it would have had to been because I lived in this part of town at that point. So somewhere in probably like 2016, where me and him are having a beer and we're joking about that the optimal strategy for this game is to sleep 16 hours a day if possible. Now, there is a curfew in effect now from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., which actually I thought was that was one of the bigger disappointments going into the season. I literally could not act on that idea, which I had full intention to do. We had talked about this where that is pretty optimal. Sleeping 16 hours a day, if allowed, is probably going to do you some good. And one of the things that I've said, just in private conversation with of friends is I feel like about 75% of Big Brother players just actively get in their own way, and they would just be better off just sitting on any given position. And if I'm getting certain things for free, I don't really see why I need to make any sort of active claim on anything if I don't absolutely have to.
Yeah, I mean, standing still is a move in certain situations. Standing pat, yeah.
I mean, it is a waiting game. It is very much a waiting game. Like, I think, and this will come up, in the Genius Grand Final episode one, Dahmin stating about Kyung-hoon, how hard is it to sit still? Trust me, it is very hard.
Oh, I know.
both ways. I mean, like, it is... in a literal sense, and also just in the game, like there are so many times where I am just like, gosh, I have an itchy trigger finger and I really, really want to do something, but I am in a position where I am just playing defense pretty much 100% of the time this season. And the right idea is to either keep my mouth shut or not really take an active role. I mean, it was very difficult at times to just sit and just wait things out because I felt like I was playing defense the whole time.
Yeah, and I think it's particularly difficult potentially when you're not only having to sit still, but having to sit still while recognizing that the shot you're hoping for may never even end up coming in. It's just your best bet to hope that it does, compared to, yes, you could potentially in certain cases make immediate moves now, but it would actually do damage to your long-term situation. And that, I also will grant, is difficult for the average audience member to pick up on, especially when I don't think they really care that much about the specific strategic positioning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that, I think that one of the things that I find kind of funny about modern Big Brother is this idea that if you aren't just actively making about, 12 final two deals with every single person in the house, that this is a problem. I mean, the way that I'm looking at it, I'm almost just saying, like, this is kind of funny to me. I don't like this style of play, nor do I really care for it. And I basically just kind of leaned into this idea that, hey, I'm Switzerland right here. I mean, if you want to, make a final two deal with me and, every other person, if you want to approach me, then that's fine. But like I said, I feel like so many players just get in their own way and just end up blowing things up for themselves just by trying to do something. And I personally found it to be kind of funny. I just said, if everyone's making final two deals, then no one is making final two deals as far as I'm concerned. If none of these are legitimate, they don't mean anything. And I just said, well, if that's the case, then I'm just going to kind of just sit back and let that happen. And then when push comes to shove down the line, something's going to happen and it's going to be realized, hey, Ian's kind of a free agent here. Let's pick him up and do something with him. Is what I'm thinking. I don't feel like I need to be the one who's going and blowing up a spot unless I'm just seeing just the writing on the wall. And I just feel like making a move for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to understand the merit behind that idea on seasons where one alliance doesn't win every single competition and never have to turn on each other until the very end. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So moving into week two, Memphis is our HOH here. I'm guessing not super high on your list. Was he the literal last person you wanted to see win?
Yeah, that is the literal last person that I wanted to see win HOH in that spot. I don't know if it made the DR airing, but I said, this was not my best role. It was not in my top 10 either. I basically should just prepare for the safety suite tomorrow or face nomination and possible eviction or possibly even a backdoor here. There's just so many people in the early game. I will say part of the reason that there's these extras a lot in the early game as far as twist goes is because the inundation that backdooring had on early BB in some of those teen seasons, the 13s, your 14s, 16s, things like that, 17. These things were put into place sort of as a nerf to that concept. So that's sort of why things like safety suite exist.
So get into that quickly in a bit more detail. The people recognizing the power of backdooring someone and just not even giving them a chance in veto became too good?
Yeah, it became way too strong. And once the cast expanded, right, you go from a situation where outside of the first week, at least half of the cast is playing any given veto competition to a spot where now with a cast of 16 players, there are 10 people sitting on the sidelines. It is way too easy, just mathematically, as far as the chip draw goes, to put those backdoor plans into motion without very small risk of backfire. So those sorts of extras were added, and that is 100% true, to balance that out.
Do you think everyone getting to play in the veto is potentially something that should return, or is that broken for some reason, or what do you think about that?
I I think that they had the right idea with limiting the number of players that should be in veto. That being said, I think that a step in the correct direction would be for those early going rounds to have eight people, and it should be stated exactly which rounds should have eight players, and then when it will shift to a six-player veto competition. I think that that is something that would be a fair balance. If you are going to eliminate extras, like, you know, safety suite or, you know, what's a roadkill or something like that, right? I think that that is probably the step that should be taken if you are going to nerf that a little bit.
Yeah, pour one out for the roadkill and the temptation comp and all the ones that paved the way for the safety suite, which I agree with you, I hope returns in future seasons. I think it's great. But we should get into the safety suite this week here in week two, where Christmas is going to be our winner here, and she's going to save you. Not bad, yes. Considering yeah, Memphis as head shot. Of household here. This, I think, was at least a bit of a surprise to those of us following along at home. Talk us through how this all came to be.
Yeah, so I, you know, my understanding, I mean, I did want to talk to Memphis on Friday night. I got exactly the vibe I expected. You are going to be nominated or backdoored this week. That is 100%. As soon as he won HOH, my mind is thinking I might just be getting the paycheck without like the worst case scenario, just like, you know, like you're getting the quick check without being the first boot, right?
That's the best case scenario in some schools of thought.
In some schools of thought, that was kind of like how I was mentally preparing myself for this week to go down. You know, he goes up, you know, he said to me earlier in the day, prior to the eviction, so probably around noon or so on day nine, I think Memphis was kind of hedging his bets in case I won it, where he was like, hey, you know, I talked to Dan before the season, and he said to me that you're someone who's pretty loyal, and, you know, we don't talk much, but I'm not that scary of a guy, and, you know, we might be able to work together. And I was like, yeah, I'm open to it. I'm down, you know, because I'm just hedging my bets, too. I'm like, yeah, I'm down, definitely. Let's just see what shakes out with the HOH and what happens. So I go upstairs and I say, like, so that thing we talked about earlier, and I was like, where do I stand? And all he says to me is like, I think the safety suite is good for everyone. And my brain immediately says, all right, bad answer, you're a target. And on top of that, as I believe did actually make DR from my understanding in the aired episode, this is a clear play where he knows that his safety suite pass must be used in week three, so he can just get as many people to just burn them as possible, so that he can play unimpeded. That's just seems so clear to me.
Okay, and so you swipe your pass, as does Christmas. How did it come to be that she ends up saving you here?
Yeah, so my understanding, and obviously, you know, I did not watch the episodes, but Nicole F. planted this seed the night before. Fearing that this was the, because we obviously had our discussion, right? That this is what I was sensing. So she planted the seed the night before because, you know, regardless of what she feels, right? Like I am an asset to her. For Memphis, it's a great boot, right? For me to go. But for a lot of the other people in the committee, that is not the case. He does not tell other people in the committee that I'm his target, from what I understand, in the jury house. And as a result, that sort of frustrated people. He wouldn't say to anyone what he was doing, and that frustrated people. So it almost sort of was born out of a like, hey, like if you're not going to give information and this is what we think you're trying to do and you're just not going to say it and you're not going to share it, then we're going to block because we keep information open. On top of that, you know, obviously I'm useful for Nicole. I'm useful for someone like Christmas, because if I did win that HOH2, which I did not think outside of, a handful, maybe a few outcomes, I said, I don't think this is a maximum efficiency HOH. I was kind of like, yeah, if I win it, cool. I sort of just stopped paying attention during the second video because I didn't really, I was like, I can't believe I'm even watching this, to be honest. So I sort of just stopped paying attention to the second video. And I just was like, you know what, whatever about it. And I said, if I did win HOH2, though, my nominations would have been, or some variation of trying to get Memphis out, and probably Christmas is on the block there in some variation. Wow. Yeah. So whenever this now becomes the situation where this is someone I'm trying to get to use, I mean, I'm thinking about it in my brain. I'm like, it is so funny. The person I was literally going to nominate, I mean, she was going to be in that initial nomination set. It just depends if I'm feeling frisky enough to put Memphis up initially or just go for a backdoor. It is sort of, to me, kind of funny that, you know, this is who I'm now trying to get to use this the safety sweep pass, you know, on me. Nicole set it up to get the seed there the night before, but I still had to have that conversation with her in the bathroom. Nicole was, like I said, like, talk to Christmas. I kept a very close eye on the clock on the oven to see how long people were taking when they were in the safety suite. I did not like how I felt that competition went for me. So I noticed that Christmas was in and out of there quick. And she even stated that she used the bathroom while she was down there, I believe. So I was like, okay, this girl had an incredibly fast time. So I basically said, here's the deal. I can't promise you that if I win the safety suite that I would use the plus one on you. And I don't think I won it anyway. I don't feel like I had that strong of a showing. However, I'm an honest person. I'll shoot straight with you. If I win HOH in a future round, you're off the table for nomination. And I felt like this was the right line to take because, you know, I sort of had some concept that Nicole was pushing this discussion. And if Nicole was my visible number one, then, you know, Christmas has to assume that from my perspective, if I win, that plus one pass has been promised to Nicole. So I felt that by giving that up, right, you know, not making that promise, it would flag that I'm signaling honest. And I'm not promising everything under the sun to her. I'm just making something that's reasonable and likely to be true and would likely have been upheld to a certain extent. You know, I'm not talking whole game, but, you know, for at least for a few rounds, most of pre-jury anyway. So, you know, I kind of figure that, you know, this is pretty reasonable. I called it in the DR a post-Oak offering. It's a small offering that's just intended to look believably true and not something that she could be like, all right, you're lying because you're promising me a final two deal right now and I know that's false. So I felt like just playing a small offering was good. Fortunately, the seed that was planted did indeed flourish. I did apparently say the right things. So it ended up working out in my favor. I was not at all surprised that she won the safety suite. I figured walking out of the bathroom, I had about a 70% chance that if she was the one who won, that I would indeed be getting the safety pass.
Not bad. And you do feel like had you not been saved here and not,
if there
had been another nomination ceremony, you would have been Memphis's number one target.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. This was even pre-nomination ceremony. It's very funny to me that you were able to approach her after she had already gone. And presumably she understood that people knew she had a good time.
I don't think anyone else was doing this oven method though. That was what was a little bit, I was like, this is the hack. I mean, this is 100%.
I assume people would be able to gauge just like when people were getting called to go next or whatever. I thought would be, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, the precision's important, right?
That's true. I guess this is something that's going
to
come.
And the fact that she went to the bathroom while she was down there and was still fast, that was the dead giveaway.
Yeah, not bad.
There should have been extreme waist dropping and like a speeded up montage of the oven clock going up or something. But
yeah.
Instead, you know, we are left to fill in the gaps for ourselves.
Right.
So I believe when I saw the flashback to this happening, it said day 16, which I'm guessing is in week 2. when 4-prime becomes a thing. First of all, very strong backgammon Easter egg there. I very much liked that.
Yeah, that was the intention. If I win that first HOH, the 6-person alliance is being called the 6-prime.
Awesome. I love it. That is an excellent call.
It's a great name, really.
That's outstanding. How legit was this in your mind, this 4-prime concept?
I mean, this to me is pure. I am taking cover. I will take what I can get from this. But I mean, I don't know if it never made the episode. I don't know if it never made feed. But I mean, I would sit by myself and say, like, I'm pretty sure I'm getting jerked around here. But if it's free coverage, then I don't really care. I mean, I don't care if I'm – here's the thing. I don't care if I'm being used as a number. I don't care if I'm being used as a shield for someone else. If I'm getting something out of that symbiotic relationship, that is totally fine with me. I do not care. Like, I could not care less what the reasoning I am being included in anything is.
Right.
And I mean, I think for me, the big red flag for me with 4-prime was two things. One was a good, like, pure observation was that Danny was pushing for me to come up with the name. This was just a huge red flag.
Yes.
Where the conversation is coming up where it's like, let him name it so that he will feel included.
100%.
Like last time. That to me was the true calling card.
That is at this point the oldest trick in the book in luring someone into an alliance.
I mean, that was for me where I was like, look, I will take what I can get from this. And that is fine. I really was not. These people were not on my radar to begin with. You know, because you know, again, I recognize that I have Nicole kind of putting social inroads with these folks for me, at least somewhat. So this is not so bad for me. You know, if I'm locking something in so that they feel more secure and maybe I feel a little more secure, then fine. I will take free equity any day. That being said, I for sure said on feed, and if it never aired and no one picked up on it, or if there was never a diary room, because I did say in the diary room, I feel like this is not a, like, I feel like there is something else going on here, because I know Tyler is somehow in the mix, and I did actually say, like, oh, I want to add Tyler to this, and then their hesitation is sort of funny, because, you know, that's pretty much like, oh, I'm hitting on exactly who's in that group.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, he's in the mix somehow. Christmas is somehow involved. There's some link. I don't know to what extent exactly. Memphis is really, you know, who I just am totally off base with, and pretty much everyone is off base with that's outside of it for me, from what I understand. But I mean, there's some group here. I don't exactly know what it is. I don't know. You know, am I the core? I'm like, maybe I am, because, you know, maybe I'm in some sort of core group here and I don't know, you know, maybe like that, you know, maybe this I'm being dumb thing is working. But coverage is coverage. To me, I'll take anything I can get.
So more generally, even understanding that 4-prime is probably not going to be it, were you looking to form a new kind of Quack Pack-esque group?
No, I mean, I think for me, the idea that I had coming into this was I wanted to just maintain flexibility. This idea, you know, obviously, if you tell me that one side is going to win every single HOH, well, then, yeah, I'm going to bar one, which was basically an HOH for them anyway. You know, I'm going to deviate, obviously. I'm not going to try to play this flexibility. Hey, I'm a vote when you need a vote. I'm with the group. I'm not really with the group. I'm not at your top of the shit list. You know, I'm trying to just maintain flexibility. I'm big here on 1-week, 2-week deals. I'm not playing the, you know, oh, it's us to the end, because I don't want to get wrapped up in that anymore.
Totally. Okay. So David and Nicole Anthony end up going up, and then Memphis is going to win this power of veto himself and keep them the same. Haven't heard too much about Nicole Anthony to this point.
Yeah.
It seems like she may have had some regrets about how things ended up going for her and some of the decisions she made along the way. What do you think was the big problem for her this time around?
Well, I think for her, and to to some extent, Kevin, I think that the way they sort of isolated from the group, and I think for me to an extent, that early have not round was kind of a killer. It definitely put us in a position where, and I got to say kudos to Memphis for going for it. But yeah, being in that have not room, sort of the initial isolation, that I think that kind of hurt her. And I think that the closeness with Kevin and just this being sort of on the outs, I think really other death knell for her was not using the safety sweep pass, which seemed to be a pretty sufficient reason for nomination there. So I felt like that was something to keep in mind. I do want to go ahead and flag up. I would say there were three pieces of information, one of which kind of came naturally, and two that came through unnatural means that we will flag up later. So there are three pieces of information that I got during the time I was in the house that I just wish I never heard. And the first of which occurs on night 9. So this is a situation which I am lying in bed in the key room, my first night sleeping not in the have-not room. Memphis is HOH, and I overhear as I am sleeping, kind of going in and out, but mostly awake, I overhear Janelle talking to Kevin and Nicole A, who have moved into the key room as well. And I point blank hear Janelle say, Ian and Nicole F are obviously working together and need to be nominated, presumably against each other. My mind is, like I had flagged up before, one of the things I thought about when I was in the house, this is not the backgammon grandmaster that I had the consultation with, but someone who I do take lessons from, Dmitry Obakov, backgammon grandmaster. He once said to me in a lesson, he's a master chess player, grandmaster backgammon player, Latvian, thick Latvian accent. The thing about the chess players is they see which way in backgammon things are going to go. And for me, I know, and I could hear it in Dmitry, just thinking and hearing it in Dmitry's voice, you are going to get nominated with Nicole F in some variations. And if that happens, you are going to go. That is what's going to happen. You are what she is getting out of this deal, where you get that inroads with her, is that if you are nominated against her, that is game over unless you win the veto. And when I hear Janelle say that, that tells me one of three things is happening. Either one, she has no idea that that's the case, which I don't, that doesn't seem right to me. That can't possibly be it. She has to know that Nicole is better connected socially and the less quote unquote scary of the two winners, and that I would go in that nomination set barring a veto. The other option is that she is targeting me, or the other option is that she wants to pull some sort of crazy plan in which hopefully the veto is stacked to people that would use it on me. She puts up like Cody or someone else, someone that's not me, really, at that point is my line of thought. And that's which way she's going with that. My brain is saying of those three, I don't think it's number one. And number two, that's possible. And number three, you're gambling with me anyway. Like my life in the game is just being gambled with straight up. And I'm leaning towards this is what I kind of feared kind of coming in with Memphis and Janelle. Sort of, I kind of was worried there would be closeness to Dan. I was a little bit worried that this was something. And hearing that kind of, in my mind, confirmed that fear. So now there is a severe, severe hesitation to giving Janelle any information, voting with Janelle. Overhearing that to me basically took, wow, Janelle and I are getting along pretty amicably. On the first night, she asked how my mother was doing, and like, you know, obviously like, oh, she met my mom. Like, how could this be someone that's not good to work with? And then just hearing that, I mean, it just basically, to me, like just basically destroys any trust that I would have with her moving forward.
There was a lot of speculation that both Dan and Derek were quite heavily involved in any pre-gaming that might have been going on. And with Memphis, the concern is obvious, right? You can easily connect A to B and B to C with that. But were you concerned that that might run deeper? Like, obviously, Dan and Janelle were pretty close in your season and then a bit thereafter. And then were there any other kind of... fingerprints that you were worried that he was leaving on how the season might be going?
So I did see the tweet, because I did read Twitter. As I call Twitter, that is like the Big Brother tabloid, if you will. So I did keep up on that with like the rumors to some extent, and I did see this tweet from ED that Dan and Derek were pre-gaming hard, which is kind of why I thought they might be on there. It didn't really register with me until the, we'll get to it in week four, the wall yeller, that they very likely have fingerprints on some of this is the conclusion that I came to. Actually, no, it wasn't even then. It was in jury house after I found out the making of the committee. That was when I kind of figured it out. I kind of thought Derek, I had thought was in the mix for setting things up when the wall yeller occurred. But it wasn't until I was in jury house when I said Dan and Derek's fingerprints are all over this. Janelle was someone I was a little concerned had, residue, if you will, of Dan, kind of in that active targeting role. And me overhearing this kind of confirms it to me in my mind. And that was a fear I had. And I wish I never heard that. That's something I just wish I never heard.
I actually wanted to circle back to Janelle and Kacer right around this time in the game, where starting next week, things are going to go quite poorly for them, if that hasn't already started already. Was it, or I guess in the moment, did it feel like a situation where even though you were getting along amicably with Janelle for the most part up until that, overhearing her say that, and certainly hitting it off, to say the least, with Kacer, was your perception as someone else in the house like, was it that already at this point there's more or less nothing Janelle and Kacer can do to get back into the game?
Yeah, I mean, things were looking pretty bleak for them. I mean, a nomination set involving the two of them pre-jury was inevitable. That being said, when the nomination set occurred, and actually even in late week two heading into that round, where pretty much I think there's probably those two and maybe me and perhaps, like, I think Bailey is probably going to put up me and Nicole at that point from what I remember. I'm thinking there's very few people on that beer slide game that are not making that exact nomination set. And more on my thinking going into that game in a bit. But I think that that nomination set's inevitable. That being said, to me, it seems as long as those nominations stay the same, Janelle is toast. And the interesting thing that my brain goes to is Kacer's now gonna be a free agent, at least the way I see things going. I certainly don't think he's gonna be dead to rights. I think he's gonna be in that prime spot where he kind of has like the back gate, if you will, right? Like this, you know, you're on the outs, but like you're kind of this leftover remnant, and you know, you've got this nice little spot that's kind of cushy, because why take that person out? I said point blank, when he, you know, we'll get into this, when he was nominated, I said, unless everyone in here is thinking on absolute level one, I do not see any reason that he would go next week outside of a certain few HOH outcomes. That just ended up being pretty much wrong. I think one of those outcomes did end up coming in where he was definitely going to be targeted. But I honestly felt like just leading into that probably like my week two observation, you know, Dmitriy Ulbakov, which way this game is going to go. I thought like, you know, Janelle's going to go and then Case is going to be in a nice spot.
So I have two questions that stem from that. Okay. So the first is that it's obviously, you know, as a pundit watching the show and as a viewer, like this is the stuff we talk about. We try to find explanations for why people lost maybe at the exact time they did or in the way that they did.
Right.
And it's so holding the competition wins the same in this season.
Right.
It's easy to look at places where players like Kesa maybe made unforced errors or kind of didn't help themselves with what they said and did. But ultimately, was it just a case of this big alliance just had this iron hold on power the entire time? And, you know, maybe you shuffle a few names around, like maybe Janelle and Kesa could have lasted a bit longer if they didn't fight so hard for Keisha in the first week. Or, you know, maybe Keisha would have stayed longer herself if she put up more of a fight. But ultimately, was it just going to be that subset, that outgroup just being picked off in one order or another? And then secondly, do you think that the way that Janelle and especially Kesa approached the season was kind of informed by their first All-Stars experience, yeah, where they went from winning the first four HOHs back to back to back to back as this most visible alliance in the entire house, and you had this side A versus side B dynamic developing, to not being able to win anything and not having anyone who might want to help them win anything, and being on the outs. And it's, even if you are a more flexible Big Brother player than Kesa had really established himself as being, that's a very hard thing to adjust to.
Yeah, I think that realistically, just my understanding is that Cody and him did not get along. Just right off the hot, apparently they just didn't get along. I think Cody didn't really like him. You know, I do find it, the thing with Kesar, we always talk about this. If you run this game 100 times, I think that he bizarrely makes jury, more often than not, and in some variations does quite well. I think this guy just runs like ass. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. He runs horribly. I mean, he is not nearly as bad as three shots voted out pre-jury four times.
No one's expectation is that low.
He is nowhere near that. I mean, it's not even close. He is nowhere near that bad. He is someone that I can see easily winning any season. Big Brother 6, I mean, the way he played his HOH week to galvanize the outside group was, I mean, just fantastic. Putting up James just so that, you know, along with Maggie, so that it would expose that Eric doesn't really care about James, so you pick them. I mean, it's just the way he thinks about the game. And when we would have discussions and play chess together, I mean, he clearly has the right mind for this game. He and Cody did not get on off the jump. Playing safety suite and winning it was mandatory for him, unless he wins veto, to stay in the game in week one. He would have been the target there 100%, and if not him, Janelle. So, I mean, I guess where this starts for him is he just didn't get along with Cody, and I think that that was just going to be a problem where if the comps don't change and who wins them doesn't change, he's just in a bad spot. I think actively pushing for Keisha definitely worsened things for him a little bit, but like if we're talking like in terms of XG, which is this is going to come up, like, what's the cost of this mistake? That's like a 0.02.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. And potentially ran bad in the form of just running into Will on BB7 and Cody on BB22 is just being the guy they don't like is such an uphill battle.
It goes far worse than that, really. It's not even just this uphill battle against who he's playing against. I think that just the way that I look at it in Big Brother 6, if I recall correctly, the non-set that he goes out on in his original round was they are, if I remember right, it's putting up him and James where they're trying to take out James. And if James pulls himself down or Kesar pulls himself down, you just put up Sarah. And that's what happens. If I remember right, I haven't watched BB6 in well over, you know, gosh, 12 years. But, you know, my understanding is that he was not the prime target that week. as it happens to be a veto comp where cooperation comes into play. And James is smart enough to realize if I throw my ball at Sarah's TV and she, you know, quote unquote, wins when really it was James that won it, but it's in her name, she can pull James down and Kacer is just toast. That is a bad sequence. That
yes.
That is a really bad sequence for Kacer. It is not like again, you are playing the odds when you are in that spot where you are the third option boot and then you end up going that round. That is running bad. Yeah, obviously you can say when he gets back in, there's a little bit of folly there, but essentially he doesn't win the HOH comp and it's done. You know, presumably based on what he knows from when he was in there, James has to be a target, I guess, in his mind. So is letting go really that bad? I mean, yeah, it is. But again, you know, with what he knows, having been out of the house for a while, I don't think that's as disastrous as the results may make it look. In Big Brother 7, he's nominated against Janelle, where Janelle is the target. Janelle wins veto. So it has to be a sequence in both of those two scenarios where the HOH goes wrong and the veto goes wrong for him to go. In this case, he runs bad because he never has power.
Where did Kacer stack up in the housewide backgammon rankings after you taught everyone?
Very aggressive. He likes to hit loose. Likes to hit loose a lot. Seemed to be getting himself into like poorly timed back games more than anyone else. He was okay. I felt like Tyler was probably the best because he played in Sequester. Pre was taught it and he kind of like picked it up a little bit and had an idea because apparently the person he was in with was quite good.
Oh wow! So. Sounds like Kacer. I've taught many people backgammon over the years, and one of the first things I say is your natural inclination is probably going to be to play it far safer than you should be.
Right.
And every so often, you encounter a person who's like the opposite of that, and they just go hog wild with leaving like blots all over the board.
You're putting me on the bar, and I got like a triple shot in board. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just you see a lot of that. I mean, the natural inclination is to stack checkers, and I actually, you know, it seems like a very nice analogy to how he does play.
That's why I laughed so hard when you said he gets into poorly timed back games. Like he needs such bailout sequences.
Yeah, it's just really it is really interesting. I will say though, one of the things I am absolutely doing because I. Like, this is something I flagged up in late week one, is the presence of that backgammon board, although it's a great hobby for me, it hurts perception for me quite a lot. When I'm winning 10 in a row,
yeah.
And the people that were on Big Brother 21 are like, how is this possible? We had a board and no one would ever go on those sorts of streaks. It makes me look like this, like, scary winner, you know, guy that, you know, you should be afraid of, right? And, you know, that's bad. With backgammon, it's like muscle memory for me. Like, I can't possibly play bad backgammon. It's just not going to happen.
It looks too unpleasant. I know what you're saying. Right. It's just disgusting. Yeah.
It's just, I can't play bad backgammon. Like, there's no way that I can play 6-1 to the 6-1. That's just not ever going to happen.
Yeah.
It is muscle memory. With chess, however, I am a trash chess player on Lee Chess. I'm like a 1,000. In there, though, I am going to, in the house, I am playing chess, and I am just going to toss those out the window.
Yeah.
I will be up material and lose. You know, Davon, win against me. Memphis, go ahead, beat me. Kevin, David, please, please win against me in chess. Anyone, really. Kacer, though, when I would play Kacer, that guy, I said, like, have you, like, read chess books? Because I've never, like, seriously thought about playing chess or never picked up a book on it. And I said, have you, like, read chess books or something? You're quite good at this. And he's like, no, I just see it. You know, it just makes sense. And this is really why I think he's actually a much stronger player than results will ever give him credit for. The guy gets it.
Well, thinking back to Big Brother 6, right. One of my favorite sequences is when they go out for whatever veto it is, and it's the chess veto, and Kacer, and I think it's Maggie and Yvette and James all have confessionals about how they're low-key actually really nasty at chess, and they haven't told anyone this, but this is going to be their competition.
Yeah, Kacer's a fantastic chess player. I think the moment, it was right before he left, because the conversation that came up when Kacer and I were really growing close was, why are we here? Like, this, it just does not make sense for either of us to really be here and playing this game. And for me, the answer is for sport. And then we're playing chess. I make some move, and then he makes my check. He makes my force move for me. He makes his move, check, makes my force move for me. Like, this goes on for, like, three sequences, like, you know, maybe six or so plies. And then my force move is made, and he says, checkmate. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? And he's like, now do you understand why I wanted to play Big Brother again? And it just was like, wow, you know, like, this is someone who is just smart. And like, him being in there was just a bright light for me, because I felt like on an intellectual level, there was never anyone that I could connect with even remotely close to him. Like I said in my goodbye message, I don't know if it was aired or what, I said, like, in two seasons of playing, you are the only person that I can confidently say is smarter than me, and I will miss our conversations. This average IQ in the house has gone way down, and that just sucks.
Well, let's talk about that relationship with Kacer, because some of those conversations did make the air, and then when Kacer ends up leaving, you do lose that one person that you can really talk on that same wavelength with. Were you, because there was a recurring theme this season of those kind of deep personal conversations not just being aired, but becoming a plot point almost, and becoming something that the show focused on in between, you know, as a kind of a interstitial moment between people dressing up in unitards and usual goings on of
Big Brother. Modern Big Brother, right?
Yeah. So when you get out of the house and you learn that those conversations with Kacer had been aired and had actually kind of reached a wide audience, what did you make of that?
No, I thought it was a good thing. Obviously with the way things went down, that's obviously not so good. But it was a good thing that this was out there. I think that was definitely a positive from the experience for sure.
Well, let's go into that downside of it as well, because you get into the house, or you get out of the house rather, and you learn that among other people, you know, Memphis and a few others have been not just talking shit about you the way that is standard fare on Big Brother, but in a kind of more pointed way, referring to stuff that
stimming,
that kind of took it to a new level for a lot of people. So what, to take us through your reaction to that and how you kind of firstly, if you sense that was going on in the moment, and then what your reaction was learning the extent of it coming out of the house.
Yeah, I do want to like flag up that specific thing later, because that will be one of those three things that I wish I never heard, and how that sort of affected decision making in game. But that being said, as far as my reaction outside of here, I see that clip and my immediate thought is, this is unfortunately just a reality of daily life for me. This is par for course. This is not anything new. This is compared to, obviously Big Brother 14, they did not know, I did not know. So there is a difference in that respect, where it's not something that is kind of put out there. But as far as it goes, things that were said and as far as the mocking goes in 14 was far worse. So really I saw the clip and I was like, pretty standard fare. It's unfortunate. It sucks, but this is just another day at the office, really.
Right. I remember back in 14, that being not highlighted as much, and of course the social media landscape and everything was different back then as well, but Janelle, for example, was very critical in some ways in BB14 and other people too, and it felt like the reaction is different in part now because people can attach a label to it, and that informs their understanding of why it's not okay to say that stuff. But the fan base at large seems to have this disconnect where if we can categorize it in that way, then that is off limits. But the kind of garden variety Big Brother gameplay of talking shit about people, finding a common enemy, just saying things that in the real world would be like borderline libelous, just as a way to rally votes against somebody, that's fine. And actually, if you don't engage with that, then you're a terrible player and you don't know what you signed up for. And it feels like there's a kind of lack of willingness to confront the reality of the show that we're all choosing to watch, if that makes sense.
I mean, one thing that I will keep in mind with any of this is ultimately this is a game being played for $500,000. And when I was going into Big Brother 14 and doing the promos for that, I'm standing in front of a green screen and I'm saying the capped line, nothing is off limits, as if they're going to, they're going to put it on air where, we're doing this Big Brother pledge, right? Where we're, standing in front of the American flag and we're like, I promise I won't lie, cheat and steal, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, I can't say that with a straight face. Nothing is off limits. These taglines, right? Like these quick bites. And it is harsh. It sucks. But I mean, you are trying to say things to people that will make them agree with you, or you think they are thinking the same way as you. And it sucks. It does. It absolutely is part of the reason I do not like playing Big Brother. And this I don't like playing Big Brother will come up later on. But I mean, I know that this sort of shit talking is unfortunately part of the game. It is, as Emmett said in Big Brother Canada, it is a bully game. It's unfortunate. That's like, I personally cannot reconcile the two. It's tough for me.
Yeah, there's that recurring conversation of what it means to be good at a social strategy game like this. Right. And to some extent, like I would, if I was playing Big Brother, I would want to be good at Big Brother. But I don't know if I want to be the type of person who is good at that aspect of Big Brother, if that makes sense. I want to be the person who doesn't know what's going on and just combis my way to the end, because at least then my hands are kind of clean of that aspect of things, even if with the analytical framework that I try to bring to the show, I have more respect in that sense for the people who can turn people against each other without even thinking twice about it. I respect those people in that sense, but I also don't want to be buying a used car from them,
Right. And I think there is, like I said, it's going to, like I flagged up week five, my first thought is I'm better at this than I thought. My second thought is I'm disgusted to be taking part in this. It just is, I personally, not my cup of tea. I'll stick to backgammon.
So my gut was to say to myself, maybe this is a byproduct of casts skewing a lot younger than they once did, but I really don't know that that's even a big piece of it. I think the big piece of it is we are seeing clips from the live feeds so circulated so much more widely now. And if we were to have the live feeds from older seasons, we would see a lot of this exact same thing going on back then too.
If you just watch episodes of Big Brother 2 and 3, some of that stuff has just aged horrendously.
I mean look at anything Evil Dick does in an episode of Big Brother 8. Like, none of this is new in that sense, but that idea that it's just down to age, I mean, I'm sure that, I'm sure you've changed a lot in the 8 years since BB 14. I'm sure everyone has aged better or worse in their own ways, but you look at the age list of this cast, like, this is the oldest cast you are going to get in modern Big Brother, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there are seasons in which I would have been the literal oldest person.
Right. So that idea of we need to cast more real people, and we need to, you know, an older cast is going to fix these problems. That feels like it doesn't quite grasp the scale of the issue to me.
No, it definitely does not.
I mean, to be fair, I would say the older people that ended up sticking around for long were like Memphis and Enzo, who I think have decidedly younger, clicky energy.
Yeah, and I think really, and this is something that will come up in week two when we get sort of back to the thought process there and things that came up. I mean, I felt when I was sort of deciding how do I want to vote, how, you know, obviously my personal consideration of wanting the POCs to get a fair shake ultimately comes into play there. And I think for some of the other people that Kaser and Janelle are trying to flip, that comes up. Essentially, in that vote. But that being said, in the DR, I definitely said I do feel like there is a maturity divide in this house where it is Kaser and Janelle are considerably more mature, and I much more gravitate towards them and the way that they think and act compared to the, you know, four prime group where I'm basically in the DR saying, I hate the kids alliance, as I called it. I don't like the kids alliance. So, you know, that's just how I feel in there.
And, did the Quack Pack feel like the kids alliance?
Not so much, honestly, because I felt like Dan and Brittany were markedly more mature.
Whereas Daniel Murphy, that the jury is still out on that one, or
right.
So, yeah, I think it's definitely somewhere in between. I am not at all trying to suggest that this is a BB-16 situation, for instance. But I also don't think it's at all fair to say that, oh, look at the age of the people on this cast. Yeah. This is just like Survivor Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. Great point, Colin. Ian, the one other thing that I wanted to make sure not to skip over from week two specifically, was as a result of Christmas saving you with the safety suite, you had to do the Star Wars punishment, which was worse, having to be walked around on a leash for a while as a dog or having to ask people to do these Big Brother themed Star Wars scenes with you?
I think the All-Star Wars was a far worse punishment. I think we had a discussion, like maybe through DM before I went, and you obviously didn't know that I was, you know, maybe a few months. And you were like, yeah, some of those week-long ones are especially brutal, like where Alex Al had, like, carry camp equipment around and wear the scout outfit and, like, offer everyone a hot dog and build a tent or something like that. And I felt like this was probably on about that scale. I mean, if you're wearing a costume, whatever. You're just wearing a costume. You can do whatever. You can get a full night's sleep. Who gives? That being said, that when there is some action tied to it and it is for a full week, it is not exactly a great time. And you're getting woken up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m. You know, you're taking a shower. You're eating. You know, stuff like that. It gets a little annoying. That being said, no serious player would care about this. It is better than the obverse of not being safe. I will not complain.
Yeah, I now remember that conversation, and that's so funny that you ended up having to go through that yourself there. Anything else from specifically week two before we move on to week three?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. So I would go ahead and say, so this nomination set hits of of David and Nicole A. And you know, I'm sort of just like, hey, you know, whatever. You know, my inclination is vote Nicole A. out. I wanted to give the POCs a fair shake just based on the trend. I don't really like the trend in Survivor and Big Brother that you know, they're finding themselves, that, you know, people of color find themselves on the outs for whatever reason, and it's just, you know, I feel like they don't get a fair shake at the game, and that was something I thought of. But when everyone was kind of keeping their cards very close to their chest, but it seemed like consensus was that it was going to be David that was going, I think there was one thing that I overheard and just picked up on where it flagged to me And this is pre 4 prime recall, right? So this is before day 16. There is definitely some sort of large alliance in this house that I may not be a part of. And that is, and this is regardless of Kacer saying it, in late week one, there's a large alliance. These are people that are in it. He's off a little bit, but he has some, he has the obvious ones there that pretty much everyone has clocked. I'm in the camera bedroom, so they'll want the photographs, and I was basically living out of a single drawer at that point, and it's maybe Tuesday of that week where I'm getting something out of that drawer. Tyler is laying on his bed. Cody is laying on his bed in there, and they are discussing sleeping arrangements, and I overhear, well, when David comes back down from the have-not room, which bed is he taking? So that tells me that David is going to see picking a new bed.
Right.
So that is just immediately, there is some sort, obviously Tyler and Cody are clearly involved to some extent, but that tells me that there is lock certainty that that is the way that this vote is going to go. And that is basically just a huge, huge red flag that I'm just keeping to myself. So I felt like, that was a nice little pickup. That was a nice little pickup there. As far as giving information away, that maybe shouldn't have been. That being said, I do remember there was supposedly some sort of, maybe half baked idea of Janelle pushing Memphis to backdoor Nicole F. I remember going into the veto comp, I was drawn and I was safe. So I was like, if I win it, whatever. And if it's just something I don't feel like doing, I'm just going to throw it. I don't think I was ever winning that thing in anyway, but I could have gone long, but I was just standing up there. I'm like, I just don't give a damn.
Yeah. Yeah. What ratio of competitions had you been giving full effort in these early weeks?
HOH 1 and the safety suite, getting tipsy. Right. There's no one will fault you for winning the safety suite. Obviously you are choosing to play, and that's a signal in itself, right? You can throw it in the chance that you are in one of the weeks where you're basically going to always use your pass, right? Week three.
Yeah.
If you're playing, there's really no reason to throw that. Obviously it's not a throw because Memphis is HOH. In week one, I was gunning for that HOH. The veto, I was like, yeah, I can win it. It would be good, but as long as Keisha doesn't get it, which is not – I don't think that's a super likely outcome, just given what the game was. And I was kind of like, yeah, it'd be okay to win. But, let me put it this way. If I was, on the block, that is a – I would be much more vigilant about my clock.
Yes.
And I probably would have punched in.
So I don't remember the specific POV competition here, but Memphis is going to win that one himself as well. And it sounds like between the group having already decided themselves kind of independent of whatever you had going on and your vote being pretty locked in, I don't imagine there was a ton of really thrilling strategic nuance in the days between the veto ceremony and the vote itself, but please correct me if that is incorrect, because one thing that was a great source of frustration for me, particularly during these early days, is something I probably should have had a clearer memory of, because I did used to watch the live feeds a bit back in the time of your first season and around that era of the show. But when there are 16 people in the house, it is very rare that more than 5 or 6 people are on the live feeds at any given time. And that means double-digit people are off doing things we can't really see. And I feel like this was one of the times where you were not on the feeds a ton.
Yeah, and I feel like that's sort of where this idea that, well, we have the feeds, therefore we know everything, the players do not, you will have a a misguided idea of what actually happened is simply just false and unfortunate. If you are someone who is keeping a low profile, you're not going to be featured on the feeds. And, you know, this idea of, oh, it's just kind of there. it's just not, I mean, it's just not accurate. I mean, like they're like this idea that I'm 100% bought into the full prime is, well, I'm bought in because I'll take what I can get. But like, you know, I'm not, things are not making feed. That's just what it comes down to. So this idea that the viewers see all is frankly not correct.
And what was your kind of day-to-day like during the less dramatic portions of these earlier weeks?
I think during week two specifically, Kacer and Janelle are making a hard pitch to evict David instead of Nicole A. Now, that being said, I will say Memphis, my understanding is, would have preferred David to go out of the two, but was pretty much nonplussed about it. He just didn't really care. Obviously, David had his sort of thing. I believe there was, like, Tyler kind of flagged this up as, hey, I should work with this guy because he's not going to really know what he's doing. So Tyler wants to keep him in. I understand if Tyler does win that veto, he is pulling David down. So that's sort of interesting. At least that's what Tyler said in jury house. Like during this round, I think that that's very interesting is Kacer and Janelle are making this very hard pitch to me. Like, hey, you know, I like Kacer. I wish his pitch was a little better, but it would basically always start with like, look, Ian, every year there's, you know, this alliance, this cool kids table, and we're not sitting at that cool kids table right now. And me and you can, you know, do something different. Why every year everyone just tries to get in with the cool kids and then those people just end up getting left in the dust. And, you know, like, let's do something different. And when I hear this, like, I love Kacer, but like my brain immediately goes to, thank you for starting off this pitch with insulting me. and on what planet are you and Janelle not cool, you know, people, right? Like that, I mean, I get what he's saying, this idea of the outside group, the inside group, but it just doesn't work. And it, like, frankly, I would always hate when you would say that because it basically just insinuates like, hey, we're not cool. And it's like, I think in 2020, you know, we have jobs. We're cool. We are cool people. I think just because in maybe high school in, you know, 2005, maybe not, but you know, notwithstanding, but like, you know, this idea, I would find that to be very frustrating. But what I would always say to him is, hey, I know. And the thing about sitting at the cool kids table, I don't know if this ever made air. I sit in the diary room a bunch of times. I said, the thing about trying to sit at the cool kids table that's bad is, even if you do get there, you're still sitting with kids. And I said that in DR a lot. I didn't want to work with Cody and Danny. Nicole F. I had to work with, and obviously, you know, I really do enjoy Nicole F.'s company. But like this idea that I was willfully choosing to not work with Kacer and just like boldly plant the flag on the planet with Janelle and Kacer's face on it, and I'm with them and shouted at the rooftops. Like this idea is just absurd. I mean, I did want to work with them. If I could pick, if I was HOH1, Kacer is definitely in that alliance. And there's no question about it. It's just that offense begs for offensive play. If you have an offensive position, make an offense oriented play. If you're in a position where you're playing defense, make a play that orients towards defense. And that is just what I am doing in this spot.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes a ton of sense for sure. And if it were a situation where Janelle and Kacer had a more reasonable number of people who seemed to be interested in being on their side, would you have potentially been willing to plant that flag?
Um, I mean, I would honestly, I would much rather prefer to do what Memphis does. And he's with that group fully locked in, but he's basically never seen with them. I mean, I would much prefer that. I'd prefer being in the group and enjoying the security with without the visibility. You know, that was the big surprise to a lot of evictees, was that he was so firmly locked into that group. I mean, I this idea of just like my understanding, alliances are to be made in secret at this point. And for me, I'm never going to just shout at the rooftops, this is who I'm with. Like, that's just not going to, I'm never going to do that.
It seemed like there was some sort of pretty irreparable damage, I guess, that transpired between Nicole A and Janelle, where I'm sorry to you and all of the people listening at home. And I should clarify, as I've meant to do a couple of times, you have said, I don't know if this made the live feeds or the episodes, we are in a position where we, Dom and I, should know and should be able to tell you, yes, this did or did not. And this is our bad. And I'm sorry to all of the listeners who are screaming at their podcast players, whatever you're listening to this on, about how we should be jumping in and telling you all of this stuff that anyone else would know. But going back to Nicole A and Janelle, my understanding of it was Nicole Anthony had just like the opposite, the totally wrong idea about something pertaining to Janelle. And if they had just known the actual truth, things would have been totally fine. What was going on here with Nicole and Janelle?
I had no idea what I didn't involve myself in that. I mean, I didn't even find out about weird strife between the two until after. I mean, that sort of stuff is just so outside of my periphery of what I even care about that I'm just like, this is just whatever.
Okay. So we are the three people in the Big Brother community who have no idea what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly could care less. I think one of the reasons that I'm good at backgammon is because in a given position, there is often a couple key features to it that you need to take note of, and then a lot of everything else is simply noise. I feel like in Big Brother, that is the same thing. There's key features to positions, and then a lot of other stuff is just what I call noise, and just garbage that just is not even important.
Okay.
And to me, I felt like that had basically no bearing on anything.
Okay, I'm trying to remember bearing off. Okay, all right, enough backgammon puns. I'm trying to remember what else stood out from week two. What else stands out in your mind?
There's that pitch Kayser and Janelle would make, really pushing that way. Kevin and Enzo end up being the ones to cast the hinky vote.
Oh, that's right. What was going on with all these hinky votes going? You know, we used to be such fans of the hinky vote and then started complaining about no one doing it anymore. And then it became, it turns out, when I said that on one podcast, people corrected me and said, I guess this has been back for a couple of years now. But what was the reaction inside the house to all these early hinky votes?
I mean, to me, it sort of just came off as noise. Like, I remember, like, after the eviction episode, it would kind of just be, like, discussed a little bit. But then it would just sort of be like, okay, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? So, I felt like it basically went nowhere in a lot of cases.
Okay. So, if anything else along the way pops into your mind from week two, certainly do feel free to bring it up later. Let's get into week three here. We have that beer sliding head of household that Tyler is going to end up crushing here. How did you feel about Tyler being the next head of household?
I mean, as soon as he wins it, what's going to happen is, at least to me, it seems pretty straightforward. Going into this HOH, we obviously knew that it was this particular game on Wednesday because we were given three beers each to go outside into the backyard while the set was being built on Wednesday to practice. Everyone, including Memphis, was allowed to go into the backyard to practice. I think they just let him do it, maybe to just throw us off like this. Oh, maybe this isn't tomorrow, but everyone got to practice.
Did you see people building in the backyard while you were doing that?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
No, the yard was empty other than the tables. We each got the three beers. So we knew what we were in store for. My thinking going into any HOH is winning this efficient? And at first I was like, hey, you know, maybe winning this would be pretty good. I can keep Janelle and Kaser off the block. I can maybe go after Memphis because I know now I have a reason, right? To a really good reason to go after someone. So on one ply, this seems like it'd be pretty efficient of an HOH. Like this seems like maybe one I would actually want to win. And then I think on two ply, and I realize there are four people that have not used their five people that have not used their safety suite passes at this point. One of those is Memphis, and he just has come off winning HOH, a mental one, and a physical veto. So out of those five people, Nicole F. probably drawn pretty slim. I assume Enzo is drawing pretty slim here. So we're looking at Danny, Tyler, and Memphis as the folks who have a nice shot at winning that bad boy. So if I were to win this HOH and then Memphis is locked safe from the safety suite, then I have problems because then this HOH is no longer going to be efficient at all. There's really I don't even know what I would do at that point because I'm not sure what I would do that's productive. I guess like I had heard that Bailey would nominate Nicole and I. So I guess like me, I don't know, that seems like a possibility if I can't go for Memphis, but that doesn't help me that much. I don't think taking out Janelle directly is really that useful because that's going to just, you want to work with Kaser, so that's kind of going to galvanize him maybe against you. So this really, if you think about it on two ply, is really not that efficient. I don't know how you throw this, really. I mean, you're just slinging beers, so unless you're pushing it horizontally off the side, I don't really know how you're throwing this thing. So I'll just stand up there, I'll just slide them, and whatever happens, happens. I'm not going to take time to aim. I'm just going to go up there, do it, and then hit the button, whatever happens, happens. I lock in with 11 points, and I'm in the lead for a while, and I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, holy shit, like, is this actually going to happen? Tyler knocks me down. At this point, it was kind of funny because we drew for the order we would go in, and Kaser and Janelle, I believe, were right at the back end of that list. So I am at this position where a Kaser HOH, in my mind, is a very welcome event. This is something that I'm like kind of on bated breath, looking to maybe see if I win that HOH. I do not intend to nominate Janelle and Kaser. I was kind of careful with the wording, like I would not put them up in that configuration because I was cognizant of safety suite possibly messing up plans. Once Kaser's thing slid off the end, I was like, all right, it's mathematically impossible. He can no longer get 12 points. He's maxed at 10 once you go over. So
that made the episode. You can hear you saying that as that happens in real time.
Yeah, as soon as it goes off, I'm like, it's done. Yu-Yun says about Black and White 2, Kanasso, it's over. It's over. So, you know, just – you know, Tyler wins it. I think in my mind, the nomination set's just probably the most obvious of all time. You have Janelle and Kaser are going to get nominated almost for certain. You know, I think for me, because I hadn't really flagged where Memphis was, I think that there is a little bit of a sweat involved where maybe like a super anti-Joker sequence where maybe Memphis wins the safety suite. You know, I see him talk to Kaser a lot, so maybe he takes Kaser down, Janelle and someone goes up, don't know who, Janelle and someone goes up, and then maybe Janelle wins veto, and then someone just randomly gets the punt. There's a little bit of a sweat there, because now you're looking at, like, fourth string, fifth string stuff, but that's not really, like, a serious, you know, I'm not going to take that sequence so much into mind in decision-making here.
Okay, and I agree. In my experience watching this, it felt like not only this week, but surprisingly to me as well, next week, Janelle and Kacer were more or less, respectively, dead in the water. And I shared your view and came on this very podcast after Janelle was evicted and said, you know, Kacer may be down now, but I don't know that he's necessarily out here. And I thought he would potentially be able to lay in the shadows for a little bit and not be this immediate huge target. But it seemed like that wasn't the case at all. And even with Janelle out the door, there was very little delay, if any at all, in everyone immediately saying to themselves, okay, well, now obviously Kacer is the clear number one priority. And when the competition's please correct me if that's wrong.
So I mean, I guess like going into week two, I had a fairly long conversation with Janelle in the key room where she pretty much flagged up to me that, you know, as far as what she is saying directly to me, her nomination set would be Cody and Tyler. I'm sort of weighing this out as, is this bullshit? Is this, you know, am I going to go up against Nicole or is this what's actually going to happen? This is information that I have. You know, I just sort of sit on it. You know, I think it was only after that competition happens where I said to Cody, I'm like, oh yeah, there are my, you know, I literally just was like, you know, not just like keeping it from him. I just was like, hey, oh yeah, that reminds me. I had a conversation with Janelle. She would have put you and Tyler up supposedly, but I think she would actually put up me and Nicole because I overheard her when I was sleeping. I had read that apparently me saying that to him made him not trust me. Because the information was given after the HOH comp. I have played Big Brother two times, and I find that getting the information, it seems to me to be this, like, the struggle point for me, is getting usable, useful information that I can make decisions off of. I said it to Chicky before I left. If Big Brother were a perfect information game, I would win a much higher percent of the time, Kacer probably as well. But I said, like, you know, never, I love that for Cody, it's being given good information is what makes him not trust me, simply because it wasn't delivered in a timely fashion. Like, the luxury of being able to do that is just so far gone from my line of thought. Like, what is it like to play Big Brother and be like, well, this is great info, but you didn't give it to me early enough, so I don't trust you anymore. what? I wonder. I can't imagine what that's like.
That's hysterical. Did it ever seem to you during week three like a real movement was happening to potentially swing things, or was there enough kind of love lost between Janelle and Nicole F for the ball to not really get rolling there?
Oh, so yeah, this is great. So the picking of have-nots. I mean, this is probably point number one in the show where I'm sitting in the key room looking at Kacer, and it's like, dude, why are we doing this? Like, this is just so petty. Like, this is immature. Like, I'm embarrassed that I'm taking part in this and being aligned with these folks. Like, this is just like what? Why? Just why? I see this happen, and I mean, I think to myself, like, all right, you know, you just Nicole cemented herself as number 16 on Jokers after that. And the other thing I thought of is, hey, this is fine actually. I'm actually pretty okay with this. If she wants to make noise, as I call it, she's making noise, and she wants to do that, and I'm likely to get nominated against her, I'm like, by all means, just do go off. Like, please do things that are going to hurt your standing with people. And the thing I thought of as this happened is, I could never see a Will or a Dan or a Derek ever saying that when picking a have not.
I loved, by the way, the new have not methodology or method.
I thought that was
outstanding and should definitely be a staple.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So what, along the way here, it felt as Janelle and Kacer were leaving to someone who was kind of casually following along on Twitter, such as myself, like, there wasn't a lot of kind of back and forth going on here game-wise, but I can't imagine that that was the case from your perspective in the house. So I guess a question for this kind of part of the game would be, what stands out to you as something or a couple of things that you, based on what you've seen to this point, feel like people have not picked up on from about your game around this time?
Well, I mean, I think for me, after Enzo wins the safety suite and picks Christmas, so pretty much just a no effect, you know, this is basically a null outcome, like doesn't matter, standard week, basically. I think that what's interesting is now that this is such a foregone conclusion of one of those two is going to go pretty much regardless of the veto result, I think that it is the positioning, the scrambling for that next round that is happening, right? So this is where the thing that I am picking up is that there is a movement to get Bailey out. She's sort of coming up. That name's getting thrown around a lot in the firing line from the likes of Nicole F and Danny. It's usually the conversation is usually framed in the following way. So, Ian, if you win HOH next week, who would you put up? And it's like, oh well, you know, I'm thinking safe answer, right? Is like, well, I mean, it seems like whichever one of the two is still here might be someone that like maybe house consensus, right? And you're just saying what this person wants to hear, and then she goes, okay, well, who goes up next to them? And then it's like, oh, I don't know, any ideas? And then Danny is throwing out Bailey, and Nicole F is throwing out Bailey, and a pattern is starting to emerge here where it seems like that is the name that is coming up quite a bit. Perhaps because at least how I thought it was going, I thought that she and Janelle had sort of a similar bond that maybe Kaser and I had, right? Like, if you think about it in those terms, right? These are two people that are at least thinking that they're loosely tied or tied in some way to this big majority, but are going to be sympathetic towards the plight of one of those two people. Mine being Kaser much more so than Janelle, and hers being Janelle much more so than Kaser. So I think in my mind, I'm hearing this name come up a bit. So that leads me to the conclusion that if this is what I'm being told, and there's a kind of, you know, Dave on is kind of like, oh, it's a pair, you got to break it up. My brain is sort of saying, I'm imagining that to other people, my name is the one that's kind of like Nicole and Ian, right? Like this has to be the next pairing that needs to be, you know, just broken up. The two winners, that's how you just got to put up the two winners, right? And I imagine that I have to be sort of in the mix here. That's where my brain is going. It's not even so much it's not even so much like a number one, number two. It's sort of just like the two winners nom set, I feel like, is getting pitched around somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of feeling like keeping the target train towards Bailey is in the event, right? In any event where like I'm not making, I'm not in control, right? As long as it's not me, then I can do something. But as far as my one ply goes, okay, well, Bailey supposedly would put Nicole and I up as it's not her, it's Memphis, right? But like, I don't really, I'm just kind of like nonplussed at this point. I'm just kind of cool with just going with the flow. As long as it's not me, I'm cool with it. And I'd prefer Kaser to stay, right? I would much prefer Kaser being there. I'd prefer Bailey to get evicted over Kaser. Right. And I also was thinking maybe if that's what's being pitched, you put up Kaser and Bailey, then maybe there is some sort of, it's being you know, outwardly portrayed as Kacer is to go, but, you know, then I'm thinking, well, level one says Kacer goes, but, like, level two plays, you get rid of Bailey.
Right. I found myself often around this portion of the game thinking that several boots were so obvious that maybe the house would talk themselves into, well, hey, if we just keep this person, of course they're going to be a huge target going forward, so maybe we should do the opposite here. And it just kept never coming in that way, and I just was humiliating my...
Yeah. I said to Kacer explicitly, level one is you go. Level two is you're going to be in that, like, that back game kind of position. You might get nominated a bit, but probably aren't going to be the one going. It is honestly the direction that I thought things would go. I don't play in this sort of like social, I think, and this is something I would flag up, is I guess the criticism that could be had of me mainly is that when I play Big Brother, I tend to really not think of it like a social game, and I really think much more in terms of the tactical, quantitative numbers game, right? And I think this is a trap that you see the traditional games players that go on Survivor and Big Brother kind of fall into a good amount. I feel like Vanessa Russo had a handle on both, but, like, you know, she's sitting there with the M&Ms, you know, or whatever it was, and plotting out possible scenarios at Final Six. You know, I imagine you see this with, you know, your Garrett on Survivor. I didn't see Island of the Idols, but I assume you're Ronnie Barta, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's sort of where there's a little bit of a hole for me. That being said, like, so in the way I think about it, it's like, well, I don't see, it's just, you know, I know nothing of the social aspects of what's going on here. But just as a games player and not a people player, it just doesn't make sense that Kacer would be a prime target once Janelle goes. I would imagine it would shift to breaking up other visible pairs. And I thought the kind of funny thing to do was, I just said, you know what, fuck it, I'm just gonna lean in on this, and I'm just gonna be like, yeah, Nicole and I know each other outside of here. We're the only two winners. We're kind of working together. Yeah, I just thought I would lean into it. Just because I'm like, well, if I say it, like, loudly, right, then maybe people will be like, well, something's a little off here, you know, maybe it would just throw people off. I don't know. I just thought it would be kind of funny, and I didn't really care. I thought it was basically a free play. If it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it's not changing anything. If someone wants to do a winner's nomination set, they're going to do a winner's nomination set. That's just going to happen. So I felt like this was just a free roll.
Hey, and if he's saying up front that he's being open about it, then maybe this is exactly what he wants us to do, and we shouldn't do it. Yeah,
exactly.
Kacer in the original All-Stars, it seemed literally like held off on nominating Chilltown because it seemed like too obvious almost to
right.
him.
Right.
They just
right.
got him on that level somehow.
So
one other thing that I'm not sure exactly when this was going on, but it was somewhere around here, and I'm guessing there are aspects of this that you're not going to be able to talk about, but what can you tell us about the first wall yeller?
The first wall yeller simply yelled Janelle over the wall.
I may have the chronology wrong here then. Whatever wall yeller yelled something about Cody and Nicole playing everyone.
So that's week four, and that's going to be the exact verbiage is what you're asking?
And just the fallout from that.
We'll get.
Okay. I wasn't positive on, I knew it was somewhere in this Janelle and Kacer time.
Sunday of Enzo's HOH reign. So Janelle is gone.
Okay, so let's not skip too far ahead then. What, as Janelle is on her way out the door, do you feel like is pertinent or you want to get on the record?
I feel like for me, this was actually a pretty easy decision. Janelle did not really campaign to me or Nicole F. I think that her reasoning for not doing that is that, like, this is her broad, I mean, I can't speak for her, and this is my assumption. One, she probably realizes that I'm very much closer with Kacer, and just on a social level, me and him have bonded to a point where I would prefer Kacer to stay in there over her. And secondly, if Nicole F is so heavily on the, you know, the train of, you know, get Janelle out, you know, we've had this big beef, this fallout, then, you know, that's definitely a reason to not campaign there. Janelle's campaigning, I thought was, I mean, I will give it to her, and this is something that's going to come up. I do appreciate that, and it is the old school style that Janelle will campaign until the last minute, and I definitely respect her walking on Thursday afternoon from the bathroom to the kitchen, where she has a pool of people in the heart room, and she loudly exclaims, "Okay, I need 6 fucking votes. Who's with me?" Just like, you know, I have to respect her for that.
Absolutely.
It's just, I appreciate that there's this idea of just not going down without a hard fight. And to that, I definitely respect Janelle as a player. One thing I do want to flag up with week 3, because this is going to be something that kind of comes up. Week 3, I feel like Vito in week 3, I felt like that would actually been pretty efficient. That opens itself up to a little bit of play there. I think winning Vito in that spot maybe would not have been too bad. Perhaps get a little bit of control, and maybe just use the fact I'm safe maybe to just float some ideas around, and maybe use it as leverage. So not getting the chip pulled there was a little bit frustrating, and then seeing that it was a Tower of Hanoi with three. Three discs, basically. That's. I mean, I don't know if it made the episode, but I was sitting there in incredulity that it was taking as long as it possibly did.
Yeah. So, right around this time as well, I feel like you are obviously feeling pretty good, it seems, at this point about Nicole, and she's doing quite a bit to keep you safe there, and you definitely have that going for you. I understand, and it seems you understand, that there is a give and a take there, and that if you are nominated against her, which is potentially something that could happen, that may not go well for you, but at least for the time being, you seem pretty well insulated, but don't have any really like rock solid allies, as far as I can tell, or have heard to this point, beyond that, other than feeling on a personal level extremely good about Kacer.
Sure.
And setting aside, you know, not everyone's going to be immediately nominating you, but I wanted to ask about one person in particular who I feel like, at least right around this point in the game, was in a similar position, minus the Nicole who was keeping him insulated from the big group. But I kept waiting for you and my man Kevin Campbell to link up. What was Kevin up to, and how did that not become a thing?
It's actually a very good point, actually. So with Kevin, there were successive me and him had deemed as pawn packs, right? Where this idea, if one of us gets put up as a pawn, then we just don't vote against each other. That was really the extent of what I was working with Kevin. I just the way I kind of saw it was that Kevin was someone who was pretty firmly outside, at least in my eyes. You know, I felt like he was someone I could sort of work with a little bit, but wasn't really looking to like form any solid thing with him, you know, going at this point anyway. Now this does come into play a little bit in the next round, but especially round 4 is really where this idea comes into play of this pawn pact, because you know, Janelle goes here, and then Enzo is our new HOH. Let me go ahead and just say, on the record, when I was rooting Kacer in this HOH comp so hard. I mean, this is to me, like, if that can just come in, I am just internally fist pumping, to such an extent. I mean, this is getting to a point where, you know, he's up in the HOH room, I'm up in the HOH room, and I'm envisioning high-fiving him and then doing some stupid-ass dance, doing backflips at the thought of Kacer winning HOH. That is the exact type of thing that I realize is going to change the direction of this game and put me in a very nice spot. And I'm getting it for free. Again, that's the thing. I recognize that I get that for free if he wins HOH just because I have a good relationship with him. So that would have been a nice outcome for sure. That doesn't happen. We get Enzo instead. So as soon as this happens, Nicole F says, this should be a good week for us. My brain I don't feel the same way. Maybe a good week for you, but I don't feel so comfortable here. My read is this is going to be a little bit dicey. This is a big sweat for me. I'm thinking at this point, I'm in the mix. And I kind of had picked up with Enzo this, it just felt like I felt like the anti-winner bias was stronger with him than anyone else. Not to say he's, your Ralph Keyser or whatever, but I got the sense that it was the case with Enzo more than any other single person. Perhaps Bailey would throw it around a lot. Like, how come the winners haven't been nominated yet, right? But I felt like with Enzo, that was something that was in the mix. And I felt like Nicole was going to be in a good spot, and I was not. She's positioned better. To Kevin, my initial read was the nom set, if I have to guess, is going to be either Kevin and Kacer or me and Kacer. I immediately went to Kevin and forged the pawn pact with him just for a little added security in this situation. And I also had Kacer basically tell me, like, if he wins, what his plans with that were. And this is where it starts to, like, this is where it gets to a point where this game just really, really sucks to have to play with how things are going and just how much my position is just, you are playing defense, and there is nothing you can realistically do about that. You are playing defense at all times from this point forward, unless, an efficient HOH win comes along. Enzo was not my best shake. I felt like there were a lot of ways that this could have gone better. I would have preferred. I feel like Danny is, perhaps even more preferable in this spot. And there's something I will want to flag up here once I finish this rant. But I didn't feel good. There were the Hinkie votes. That was discussed a little more this time around. I will say for the record, I had. No clue that it was Danny and Enzo. This was not something that I had flagged up. Those were people that I wasn't really thinking. The fact that Enzo is doing it, I actually kind of find it funny in retrospect. Like, that is actually kind of a fun play for him. And he has a nice spot. He can do that.
Especially Hinkie vote into HOH when then no one's going to throw your name out there for the Hinkie vote is very funny.
Oh, so good.
The thing on the Hinkie vote that always tickled me was that maybe the perception in the house is different from us as a viewer, but if you ask me in the dark, who is most likely just to cause a Hinkie vote just cause, just to cause drama? Right. Like, Enzo would be at the top of my list, but it seemed like he managed to dodge all suspicion somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of Enzo as someone who, like, it's actually kind of funny because I think he was kind of at the bottom of people's list because Enzo, and this is something that comes up in week 4, I mean, Koss is really not on the wrong track in putting Enzo as a really highly rated player. Although Enzo tactically does not bring much to the table, he does always have some understanding of what's happening. He does have some, they're not strong, but he has some outs when he does get to the end. And he's going to last a long time with a good possibility of taking home a big check at the end. A very high number of times out of 100. I think that for me, it's just, yeah, it's not Enzo because he just does not come off as wolfy to me. And when I think Hinkie votes, I think someone who's wolfy. Like when those Hinkie votes are coming out, my fear is, you know, I'm getting, I think, unfairly labeled with this like smart guy. Well, not smart guy, but like this mastermind thing where Bailey apparently said that. You know, I have Danny and Nicole soft targeting me where like, I mean, it's just super transparent in these early-ish weeks where Nicole is asking me like, how did you know, when did you realize you were so smart? Or Danny saying, I honestly, you know, I watched Big Brother 14 and I think you were one of the best players of all time. Your game was so well-rounded. And it's just so transparent to me when that's being said in an all-star season. That person is not genuinely complimenting you. Maybe they mean it, but they're trying to paint a target on your back in making these sorts of claims. So with Enzo, I just like I feel like there's a much higher probability that sort of thing gets pegged onto me than it is Enzo, who everyone just kind of sees as like this simpleton, if you will.
Yeah, I definitely would think that is a fair baseline there. Kevin wins this power of veto. Am I making it up that Christmas volunteered to go up?
Correct.
And that was probably a pretty big sweat for you, right?
Yeah, this was actually a sweat. I felt like it was a possibility. I tried to mask it a little bit. But like I had said, like I didn't feel like this was a comfortable week. Like if I want the chip drawn. I want the chip to come out of that veto box for my name this time around, for sure. I want to be playing for that veto. It's an efficient win. If I win it, not going to lie, if I win that veto, I definitely want to kind of float some ideas around with Enzo and maybe see if I can get a little leverage in this spot and maybe get a little frisky. And perhaps work something out with Kacer. That definitely crossed my mind. Using the security of the veto to perhaps take a chance here, because what you're going to see happen is I'm getting to the point where I'm sort of realizing that my position is deteriorating in a slow way, and I would much rather just go home pre-jury than have to sit in the jury house for 6 weeks.
There was some conversation. I think it was a little bit later, where you were outside, either in the hammock or near the hammock. I think it was with Kevin, talking about how the goal is avoiding the slow march to death. Is that around this time that you're starting to think in those terms?
Yeah, definitely. Because I don't want to be in a spot where I just go out in like ninth place, 10th place, and then end up just having to sit in the jury house forever. I like I said, it is a spot where 16th and 3rd are, I mean, roughly, I guess not 16th because I didn't want to be the first one out, but I guess like 15th and 3rd basically are the same to me. And I would rather not just be – I would rather not go to the jury house, just being honest. I would rather just take the initiative and say this is either going to go very well for me or we are just going to expedite this process and I am going to get the F out of here and get on with my life.
And you ended up nailing it, coming in right in at 11th place.
Yeah, I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, so – right around here is when we get the walled yeller now, right?
Yeah, Kevin has won the veto in Sunday night. I'm feeling a little bit of a sweat, And I will never forget that moment. It is one of those things in VB that I will never forget exactly where I was standing. I will not forget exactly what I was doing. I will not forget the look on Tyler's face when this revelation occurs. I'm standing playing pool. It's evening time, and I have the cue in hand, and I'm like lining up my shot, and I hear plain as day, Nicole and Cody are playing everyone multiple times. I mean, it was crystal clear. I remember like lifting my hand up from the cue and not lining up my shot. And Tyler and I look at each other, and his eyes and my eyes are so wide that the panic, right, in both of our faces. I will never forget that. I will never forget the look on his face when that was yelled. It is just something that is going to be just so vividly burned into my retinas that it is one of those like aha kind of moments.
And what was the impact of that on the house?
Oh, I mean, everyone inside, Nicole is very bent out of shape, understandably. Cody is visibly frustrated and irritated about this, as he should be. I mean, it wasn't exactly a, breaking news, right, that they're working together. But is it exactly breaking news that perhaps they are the, this core pair, right? That's it, because everyone knows that, yeah, they're working together in some capacity. That is known. That is essentially public info. But to what extent, that is what becomes the big question, right? And when this is said, I am sick to my stomach, because now I'm starting to wonder, what am I really getting out of this pair? What am I getting out of this other than my 10-1 odds?
Right. And that may be
better than you know what I'm talking about, the jury, the finalist, right?
Like
yeah. Like what am I? What like am I just being? Is this getting to a point where she's just gonna sack town me? Is this why the soft targeting has been happening this whole time? Where she's asking me, with other people around, oh, you're so smart, you're so intelligent, like that stuff. It's just like I always thought it's just like enhancing the target should that nomination set happen. I'm starting to wonder, is this girl actively gunning for me?
Okay, and what is the game plan now that this person, who it seems like has been perhaps the most crucial person to this point in keeping you protected as all of the competitions are falling into less than perfect hands, to say the least, having that kind of realization, does that spark in you a desire to throw everything out the window and try to start some brand new path going forward? Or
for me, this is sort of like the stage. The first stage is denial. Like, this is bullshit. It's just some Janelle fan that's pissed that, they had their little beef and that Janelle went last week and whatever. That's my first stage. And another one of those moments that I'll never forget right after, and we're called inside, is Kacer is taking the garbage from the kitchen to the storage room, and he's emptying out the garbage can in the storage room and putting it by the door that production would pick that garbage out, pick that garbage bag up from. And I open the door to get like a snack out of the storage room, and he says to me, "Now do you believe me?" And I said to him, I was like, "Kacer, you know full well, it has never been a question of whether I believed you or not, about there being some sort of alliance that's happening. I don't know, you know, exactly where I fit into things. You know, I've had these sorts of fears for a while. The reality of it is we have not had the ability to do anything about it. We have not had power, period.
Yeah, no, and it is weird, honestly, to think about playing a whole season of Big Brother and making it to the jury without ever really once having any sort of influence over the direction the game would go when all of the power falls into the wrong hands. I guess BB16 was kind of similar, and other people from that can probably sympathize, but it's such a weird dynamic and almost feels like it should be impossible, potentially. Like, I get that it is a theoretical possibility, but it seems like a Big Brother season should never actually go that way.
Yeah, I mean, the game is literally structured so that this does not happen.
Exactly,
I think that's what was inherently frustrating about it is, you know, my idea, again, the way that Ian Terry likes to play Big Brother is I am trying to just fend off being number one or two or maybe three-ish on people's shit list. As a previous winner, I'm going to have a soft target where I'm always probably going to be in the mix as like a backup, whatever. That's just it is what it is, right? But, you know, for me, you know, that's I like to play Switzerland, especially in the early goings. That's just – I like to do that. I like the way June Song plays. I like flexibility. I like kind of being in the middle of things. I don't really – I like to just – I like to not really be in the forefront. So this idea is that, you know, playing both sides will only work if there's two sides.
Right.
If one side just gets completely decimated to a point where that I am literally all that's left, and that's essentially what ends up happening here to an extent, and we'll get into that later. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's frustrating to play. It's very frustrating.
I'm sure it is. And probably less frustrating on the viewer end of that situation than the player end of the situation. But it was definitely a pattern that the audience picked up on as well, of all of the power is just staying with the same people every week. We got a question from one of the great patrons of the podcast. Levins Thompson was wondering, at what point did it become something that was crossing the minds of the people in the house that this all-star season that we've waited 14 years for was potentially incredibly boring?
I mean, like, for me, I think it was around like week five. I was just like, this is getting to be a little snooze fest here.
Yeah.
Is that a common topic of discussion about how the season is being perceived in the outside world?
Yes.
I remember Andrea from Survivor saying that on Game Changers, she had to like tell Sierra that no, people are not going to like the season. Like, this is really a snoozer. And I guess she's adept at recognizing that because all of her seasons have kind of sucked, which,
right,
to be clear, I don't think it's anything to do with her. I think she just kind of got unlucky that she ends up in those seasons time and time again. But I guess, like, if you're Cody, this is the best season you could possibly ask for,
yeah,
right?
I was actually about to say, in retrospect, I remember Cody and Enzo saying, oh, this season's got to be great. Like, this has to be best seasons. Well, yeah. And it's always great when everything's coming up Millhouse and like not a single option ever, not a single dang thing ever doesn't break your way. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just what it is.
Cody seems like a lot more of a bot than a Millhouse, I will say.
Yeah, well, very, very fair. I mean, no doubt about that. But, you know, I mean, it just is, it's frustrating. But it is something that comes up a lot.
And you're the guy in the back of the bus trying to roll the banana down with the apple and the orange.
Yes, exactly. Go apple, go orange, go banana. You know?
Yeah, this is really fun and competitive.
Exactly. Memphis is back there. Make way for grapefruit, right? Exactly. Great, great, great reference there.
Yeah.
Good season 10 or 11 Simpsons. I mean, it's just inherently very, very frustrating.
I would definitely imagine so. So Kacer is going to ultimately leave here in week 4.
Yeah. I mean, this buildup is just, this is like peak genius reference here. After this person yells over the wall, I have had it. I'm essentially like, that is it. First stage is denial. The nomination's locked. Kacer is definitely going. Apparently I don't even know what the play is to keep him in. I have no idea if there even is one. Maybe it's something with like Tyler was getting a little bit of an itchy trigger finger apparently towards Danielle. Danny, she likes to be called. At this point there's cracks forming. But I don't know that. And as far as after the denial stage, it is simply that's it. I've had it. I don't care if I am 12th place, 11th. I would rather just get out of here than stick around to a losing cause or whatever. I'm thinking, fuck the slime equity. I've had it. I don't want to just sit around and wait anymore. I am going full Junsock here. I'm either I'm taking the initiative. I am going out either kamikaze or I'm just getting a winning position based on how this next HOH shakes out, and I do not care. I'm done.
So how did you feel about Christmas being the next head of household and your prospects there?
Well, I said, all right, well, I've got some cleanup to do.
I guess we'll find out about week 5 and beyond when we wrap up in part 3. I will say quickly, before we get out of here today, Dom on Twitter, as usual, at DomHRV. I am on Twitter, at Colin Stone. In case anyone is new to the program and has just found us through this Ian interview, that is where you can be finding us on social media. I guess, hey, why not? Dom also has Instagram, DomHRV, on there as well. So we will be back with part 3, I believe, on Tuesday. So thank you, anyone who made it this far. We will be wrapping it up very soon. I promise that's the final part. So we'll talk then, guys. Take care.